Hello everyone. Welcome to another episode of Data Science with Sam, where we explore the intersection of technology and business. I'm your host, Sam, and today we are diving into one of the most transformative forces in our industry that's getting revolutionized by artificial intelligence, which is insurance business. I'm joined by guest Stephen Mathis, a distinguished expert in actual science and AI implementation. Stephen, welcome to the show. We're happy to have you here.
All right. Thank you, Sam. I appreciate the introduction, and I hope I can live up to those expectations. You set the bar kind of high to be a distinguished pioneer. I don't know if I'm at that level yet. I'm very much a hands-on practitioner when it comes to some of these things. I'm not very much in the vanguard, but I'll definitely be able to give you at least my insights. And, you know, for full disclosure, anything that I say tonight is just my own thoughts or my own impressions. It doesn't reflect any employer. It doesn't reflect any society or professional association.
Thank you so much, Stephen, for the disclaimer. And I'm pretty sure my listeners will be looking forward to hear your insights about how, you know, the technology transformation or even AI making an impact in the insurance world. So let's start with the fundamental shift happening in your industry. Like we kind of like started getting the feeling of like traditionally the actuarial models have relied heavily on historical data. But now with AI processing real-time information from, you know, different kind of like IoT or other technology devices, even from, you know, pulling data from social media, we are seeing a move forward, more predictive and real-time risk assessment. So Stephen, how do you see this shift changing the fundamental nature of insurance products and some of the actual analysis that you do in your day jobs?
Well, I guess I'll first start off and say, I don't think that AI itself as a tool or any tool, in fact, is going to fundamentally change the nature of insurance. And the whole idea of insurance is that you are spreading some very low frequency and high severity events and impacts across many people. And that's exactly why you buy insurance. If you were going to be, you know, fundamentally going a one for one, well, then that's just prepaying any one thing that you're planning on doing. And that's not insurance. So I would say that we're not going to change the nature of insurance, which is to mitigate the financial consequences of those very unlikely yet very impactful events. I think one of the things that we're going to say and what we're going to see is that AI is going to transform the way that people understand, either as consumers or as insurance carriers, what insurance is for and how it's doing it. It's going to transform the way that they buy it and the way that they claim insurance. And I think it's really going to help the insurers themselves in their own back office operations in terms of the ways that they are processing the information, the ways that they are thinking about situations in the future, the ways that they are preparing for some eventualities or unlikely events for themselves, and how they get ready for those scenario analysis. And in fact, maybe we'll get into that a little bit later. I think what really is we're going to see is that we're going to get more tightly targeted with risk assessment and risk classification. So you and I both are going to be driving a vehicle, right? And so we both have to have insurance. And if your car costs $100,000, which I hope it does, and my car costs $10,000 because, you know, maybe I'm a younger person, well, there are going to be very different risks. And that's the fundamental nature of insurance right there. So we're going to be able to fundamentally classify insurance better with this more information, but I don't know that we're necessarily going to be changing what it is that we're doing with insurance. So I think insurance companies and actuaries were going to be more able to validate a lot of the things that we take as assumptions right now. So a lot of times with those, that additional information, for example, with life insurance, which is the area that I work in, you fill out an application and you answer maybe 10 or 12 different questions. And part of it is the insurance company just has to take you at face value that you've answered all of those 12 questions correctly. And they will occasionally perform some audits. They will look at a subset of the policies that they've had issued in the last year. And they'll say, well, did all of these people answer all of these questions correctly? And if yes, then cool. And if no, then they'll fix whatever the problem was. With things like advanced AI technologies, when you can do a lot more of that, then you can really just improve those kind of processes and just do more of what you had to simplify for in the past. And therefore, you can validate a lot of the assumptions a lot faster so that you're not necessarily getting locked into insurance policies or insurance situations that you can't really get out of. So those are a couple of ways that I see, you know, how we're going to change what the insurance is and how it's getting used.
Yeah, I think you are pretty good and accurate on that. And, being someone who also worked in the insurance industry, I could definitely resonate to what you say, that the fundamental practice or the insurance products will always stay the same, because we are not actually mitigating a risk of a robot. We are still mitigating a risk of a human being or the associated products, right? So the basic nature of the business will remain the same. However, there might be a fundamental shift in the risk assessment process. But again, over there, any actual models are driven by mathematics, and AI is not changing the mathematical formulas, right? Rather, they're actually augmenting that assessment process, so we can do it in a more simplified manner or bringing more automation. So probably we'll be able to write more policies in future than what we are supposed to do using our current toolkit. So probably that will some sort of a systematic change we would see in the insurance industry in the future. So that's kind of taking me to the next question. Now, since we're talking about a little bit of a risk assessment, risk classification, and probably, there's some sort of underwriting process that can get automated by AI. But that also brings me to this concerning factor that especially in the industry, insurance industry, we are discussing about the potential of the ramification of AI while we introduce bias in the insurance underwriting process, because we have seen that model could come up in a different way. And if we don't train an AI model with a proper set of demographic data, then it could be biased to a certain demographic or any certain factors. So while AI promises more accurate and personalized pricing, or maybe making a more better assumption to enhance actual practices, there's always a delicate balance to strike, right? So how can an insurer leverage AI's benefit while ensuring fairness and regulatory compliance? Because that is very important in insurance world. So I would like to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so I think you're never going to get away from that tension between those two extremes of perfect regulation and perfect oversight and perfect everything on this end versus, the everything is individualized and everything is clear and final on that side. Mm-hmm. I don't see that insurers are ever going to ever be able to completely solve with one equation. Oh, this is exactly where we should be right here, right now. And we're confident in everything that we're going forward with. I think what is somewhat missing, though, is the understanding of the full scope of options. So, you talked about, or you mentioned that tension between having perfect analysis and then regulation. Mm-hmm. Well, perfect regulation would be, we know everything. The regulator is always sure of everything that's always going to be done. And they're confident in everything, and they're confident everywhere. The other end is the regulator says, no, you do whatever you can, we'll trust you, and all that kind of thing. And the insurer then takes on the burden and the responsibility of being fair, and they have to trust the market prices, and they have to trust their agents, and they have to trust their clients, and all that kind of thing. I think one of the things that's missing in this is an understanding of just how broad is that gulf? What is that whole spectrum across which you can operate? If you think about a risk and return portfolio or a risk and return surface or curve, as you start with low risk assets, you're going to get some kind of a return on that. And as you increase the risk, you're going to increase the return. And usually that looks like in a curve. Well, in this same situation, we have some kind of a curve that says, if you're all the way at one end, you're going to get these kind of results. And if you're all the way at the other end, you're going to get those kind of results. And it feels like neither side wants the actual extreme, but you have to find at what point in the middle you're balancing all of those options with your stakeholders' needs too. So I think one of the things that actuaries and all insurance professionals in the insurance industry themselves are going to have to do is we're going to have to figure out where along that spectrum do we want to be, where along that risk and return curve or frontier do we want to land, and how can we justify that to ourselves, to our customers, to our regulators, and come to that sort of a balance. And I know it feels like I'm not answering the question, and I don't like it when people say, well, I can do both. I can do A and I can do B. I can be big picture and I can be detail oriented. No, I want to know which are you more likely to be, and then we can adjust to that. I think the same thing is true for all of these areas, these questions that we have to think about in our trade-offs. But I think the more important thing is understanding what are the implications of those trade-offs. There's a lot of sort of unspoken assumptions from, say, an insurance, from an industry side, that they have this idea that if there's more risk, if there's more regulation, it's going to impact us in these ways. And the regulators probably say, well, if we let them do whatever they want, it's going to impact in these ways. And a lot of those are sort of unstated. And I think one of the big important things for everybody to do is to acknowledge the tension and then bring those issues forward and have the discussion so that everybody understands where the perspectives and where the boundaries are and where groups are trying to end up. Maybe you're going to end up over here as your meeting point. Maybe another group is going to end up over here. Maybe somebody else is going to be over here. And that's fine if you can do that, as long as everybody's informed about it. I think one of the things that that we often do is we act on our assumptions without stating them and letting other people know what those assumptions are. So if we just spend a fair amount of time helping others to understand what our assumptions are, they don't have to agree with them, but at least if they understand it, they can understand why we made the final decisions that we did. So I feel like I rambled there. Maybe I didn't quite answer the question that you were asking. I think I'll just stop there and let you respond to that.
Yeah, because I think I get your part, because in your defense, like you said, because we're talking about bias, right? Like a model bias. This is a topic that's been there for so long time. Even before like people started using AI to build an actuarial or even data science model, we used to talk about bias, right? So I feel like the fundamental issue with the bias is the data, okay? And human mind, we always have the bias, okay? We have unconscious bias. We're always trying to make assumption, like you said, trying to make assumption without thinking. So I feel like the bias, this thing will always be there, and it will be like a continuous discussion. In any forum we talk about AI or stuff, this topic will be general. You know, it will never go away, because there is no, I would say, a limit to, there is no like a mountain peak to achieve here, right? When it comes to fairness and regulatory, it's always like, there is no bar, you know, like, you know, you always like raise your bar as you keep growing further. So I think I totally agree with you. I think you kind of hit the nail in the here, because you probably kind of said it in a different way, but the fundamental theory is the same. It's like, we talk about AI, we talk about model bias, and people need to understand model bias has been there even before AI started taking over some of the data science practices. So this will not go away, because bias is there in the fundamental data. And as long as we fix that data, I don't think so we'll be able to make further progress. We'll always be there. And this is kind of a continuous topic we'd always done. So thanks for your input there. And I think I totally resonate to my thought process about biases. I just feel like this is something I'm going to bring up in any of all my podcasts. Like whenever I talk to an expert from a different industry, I would feel like this will be a kind of a common question that we always kind of like, you know, strike upon. So thank you. So now let's since we're talking about insurance and AI, so I was just thinking that, you know, like there's a new concept I just, you know, got to know. It's like the micro duration insurance projects. There are some insurtech companies are kind of like providing that products where you're seeing that the coverage that can be turned on and off instantly based on real time needs. So I'm not very familiar with that. And I don't know how it kind of like going against the traditional annual policy or any term like policy products, right? But I wanted to get your thoughts on that. That how do you think that this kind of transformation will be kind of like more of like it will be kind of more of like uses based insurance that's going to reshape the relationship between insurers and their customer? Means, do you think this customer will be benefited from this kind of micro duration insurance projects in the real time, in future time?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question, because it's not about what is the insurance policy, the micro insurance policy. You're asking about the relationship between a customer and that insurance company. And so, again, we're going to come back to the idea of a spectrum. And I'll say, I work in life insurance, so our current contracts and all of our contracts expected to be in the future are going to be very long term. We write contracts for 10 years, 30 years, 50 years to age 100, right? Because we kind of have to do that, because that's what you're really buying for with insurance.
So, model too. Yeah.
Right. So a lot of the micro insurance is going to be more on the side where, hey, you're going on a flight and you want to buy just a single insurance policy for that one trip, or you're going to go for a rock climbing weekend and you're going to rent a car. And so now you're going to, you know, buy a little bit of an insurance policy that way. So I think one of the things that's going to happen with the opportunity to create more of those micro policies is there's actually going to be a greater distance and a separation between the customer who's buying the policy and the insurance company. So with the very long-term contracts, like the life insurance that's 10 years or 30 years, you have to believe that that insurance company is going to be around in 25 years to pay out the benefits. And so you really have to know a lot about that insurance company. For these micro policies that might be lasting 2 or 3 days, it kind of doesn't matter if they're going to be around in 30 years, because I only need it for 3 days or a week or something like that. So it becomes a much less about the relationship with the individual company and more about, can the industry demonstrate the value of that micro insurance policy itself, or that principle of covering this kind of thing? And right now it's fairly commoditized. Like, it's just, hey, do you want to protect your trip for another $10? Okay, kind of think about it. Sure, why not? Click it. Sure, it's not a big deal. We're going to see a lot more of that, but I don't even know who I bought that. I took a trip recently, and I don't even know who I bought that insurance from. So it wasn't about a relationship with a company. It's not like I recognize that brand and said, oh, sure, if they're going to offer me that insurance, I'll take it. It was more like, it's a take it or leave it. And you really don't even get a lot of options because it's become so commoditized. And, I think really we're going to see even more separation between and separation by, I don't even know who my carrier is for those short-term policies versus your auto insurance, your life insurance that are 6 months to a year and much longer. You're shopping around for brand name and recognition and reputation in those situations. I think it's really going to cause more separation. I feel like that's just my opinion. I don't work in that space, but thinking it through from a consumer standpoint, I can see that happening more and more often.
Yeah. Probably the reason actually, I guess this thing got surfaced really lately because due to AI, you know, it's going to be very prudent to execute similar kind of insurance products. Like, you know, you can probably build a model or system that can write those policies faster. But from a consumer standpoint, sure, like you said, I don't know how much benefit you're going to get out of those coverage for like a smaller duration. And I don't know if it's going to be a lucrative option for an insurer to run that kind of coverage or add that kind of like, you know, term, like very short-term policy into their business model. So I think it's something we definitely need to take into consideration. Like, just because we have AI and we can, you know, execute this kind of insurance products, you know, like a timely, very quickly manner, that doesn't mean it's going to fit the business model or something that's going to be appealing to the consumers, right? So yeah, so thank you for that. So
yeah, I think absolutely.
Now I'm thinking of like shifting our discussion point a little towards the actual profession, since you're a seasoned actuary and many of my listeners are actuaries as well, who spend significant time probably cleaning data and running statistical models. So with AI increasingly automating this task, where like, you know, in terms of cleaning data, performing some sort of a data manipulations and stuff. So I want to get your perspective on how the role of actuaries will evolve, where, you know, the actuaries can get help from some of these AI technologies in terms of cleaning data, processing data, or sometimes probably running some basic models. So what do you think, how actuaries will be benefited for that? Or do you think actuaries need to adapt to those kind of technology or learn new skills to make those AI technology to their good use?
Yeah, I love thinking about this perspective, and I love thinking about what those types of AI and automation tools will bring to us, because that is going to give me the opportunity to be the kind of actuary that I wanted to be. Nobody signed up to be an actuary because they thought, yeah, I want to copy and paste from this database into that database all day long. Nobody ever signed up to be an actuary because we thought, oh, I can't wait to sit and watch my SQL query, you know, just churn and compute and all that kind of thing. No, we decided to be actuaries. We want to be actuaries because we are interested in problem solving, and preparing the data is not solving any problems. It's just a matter of getting the information to help you have what you need in order to solve the problem.
Yeah,
it's what you have to do before you can do it. Yeah. You know, problem solving is creativity. Problem solving is trying something and failing. Problem solving is iteration. Problem solving is, I don't know what we should do here. Well, what if we tried this, that, and the other? Which one would have the best options? Well, let's try them out. We don't really know.
Yep.
That's what we would have a lot more opportunity for. We'd have a lot more chance for exploration and discovery, because right now, we're limited to, if there are maybe three options, well, we have to pick one and just kind of hope it's the best, because that's all the time that we have for, because we've spent so much of our time getting ready for this analysis or getting ready for this scenario evaluation situation. So I had somebody that I used to work with, and he's an actuary that I fairly respect. He talked about the actuarial pyramid of time, and the vast majority right now was spent just getting and preparing the data, and then it was there, a small part was preparing the analyses on that data, and then only the last little bit currently was actually doing the critical thinking and the problem solving and the evaluations of the situation. And there, the goal there was to invert that pyramid so that only a little bit of time is spent getting and cleaning the data, maybe a little bit more preparing several different analyses, but then you have so much of your time left for that critical thinking and exploration that really is the value that humans add to that process, because that's really what we should be doing, is having the machines do the machine things and the people do the people things. So, you know, a little bit of my criticism of some of the generative AI models is that they're taking information that's already been done and they're averaging it out. And I get that it's a great way to do it and get an answer, but it gives you an average answer. If you were to think about, how am I going to get from point A to point B, and you've got 25 examples of how to get from point A to point B. Well, one went like this, and then this, and then this, and then this, and then got here. Another one went here and back that way, and that way, and that, and this way, and this way. If you ask if you ask a generative AI, it's going to say, oh, the average is kind of going to go like that. So that's how you're going to get from point A to point B. But in fact, that doesn't reflect any of the paths that got there from here. So that's where we need humans as part of the process to think through the creative options and to come up with some new ideas so that we can try them. So I think that actuaries are really going to have an explosion of productivity, maybe not necessarily in in the number of reports that they create, but in just the time that they get to spend thinking about what do these reports that we already have created really mean, and what are the implications for our business? What are the implications for our customers? What are the implications for our industry? What are the implications of all this stuff? So I can't wait until we can, you know, get a lot of those general data cleaning and preparation tasks moved into or you know, assigned off to those artificial intelligence or robot process automation or whatever you want to call it. I can't wait till we get there and we have more time for thinking, because that's why we are here and that's what we really want to do.
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly all kind of aligned with the actuarial roles and responsibilities. You should focus more on data interpretation or like even data exploration than data crunching or like a data cleaning. So I think that's always been a fundamental challenge in the insurance industry. And I can tell that from my professional experience, being someone like who kind of like walk in the in liaison between data and actual business, I've seen that in actuaries struggle to kind of like, you know, just spend probably 70-80% of their work hours in just cleaning data, processing data. Like you said, running a SQL query has been taking so long. But that is something probably we need to make some shift or some changes in that process. And hopefully AI would be able to eradicate some of those bottlenecks in future. And that's going to eventually improve the actual processes and may give actuaries ample time to kind of like think logically, and also like, you know, spend more time in this critical thinking process, or maybe build some new models using mathematical formula that an actuary should do, you know, based on their academic trainings and their actual responsibility standpoint. So I think that's kind of like bring me to
That would be fantastic. From your lips to the great motherboard in the sky. I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, and we are going to keep fingers crossed. Again, I don't have a crystal ball, but hopefully we're going to head into that direction very soon, with AI being our kind of like an augmented intelligence person. So now next question I would like to ask you is like, okay, so as AI gets a better at predicting individual risk profiles, some industry experts worry about hyper-personalized premiums potentially undermining the risk pooling principle of insurance. So I think from actual perspective, I believe this is something more of like a little bit of fundamental shift in how we are calculating the premiums or underwriting the policy. So I wanted to understand that, how can we maintain the social benefit of insurance while leveraging AI's capabilities? Because I feel like this kind of thing could create a red flag and could go totally against the insurance principles. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
I think that's a very interesting question, and it provokes some thoughts within me. I don't think, and this kind of relates to what we talked about before, I don't think ever the idea of risk pooling and risk mitigation is going to go away with artificial intelligence. We may end up, like you said, refining premiums on an individual basis. However, there is a limit. You cannot go so refined and so precise on any individual, because then it becomes uncompetitive, right? Because there are some what we in insurance call overhead costs that are just necessary regardless of how many insurance policies you sell. And if you become super targeted in your pricing, well, then maybe you're so targeted that, while some other competitor, their rates are a little bit lower because they're willing to spread some things and spread some costs. And so there is a bit of a delicate balance. I think what insurers are going to do is they're not going to be using AI to reduce the cost of the risk pooling, which is like, here's how much claims we're expecting and here's our a little bit of margin. What they're probably going to be spending a lot more of, what they're going to see a lot more benefit is from those overhead costs and the administrative things. And it's essentially leveraging the technology to reduce those things that aren't insurance. They're just more administration. Like, you know, as much as we don't really like talking to robotic voices when we call up for some customer support, if an automated voice can answer 80% of the questions that are going to come in from a customer of like, hey, when is my next premium due? Well, that's a really easy question that an AI can answer. And an AI can answer 50 of those at a time, whereas a human can only answer one of those at a time. So I think what's going to happen is that AI is really going to help insurance companies reduce a lot of their overhead costs, which ultimately reduces the total cost of insurance for everybody. But it doesn't, I'm a bit skeptical of that super targeting of premium rates down to an individual level. There are some major categories in which we can definitely use data, and we can apply it in terms of, say, what kind of car do you drive? Do you have some history? Are you willing to give us some history in terms of your automobile experience? But in other areas, we really can't get down to, do you have brown hair versus black hair? Are you, 7 feet, 1 inches versus 6 feet, 11 inches? Or how precise do we get, right? Those additional precisions all have a cost that eventually doesn't have a benefit to it. So I don't know. That's kind of my thoughts on it. I think we're gonna see a lot more AI using first, at least in terms of just reducing general operating costs and making it a lot easier for the insurance company to service 50,000 customers versus 5,000 customers with the same dollars and time investment. So that's where the scale is going to come from. Not necessarily in terms of changing, again, fundamental nature of insurance or risk pooling. We're still going to have to do that. We're still going to have to appropriately classify and categorize various risks and charge for them appropriately. But I think we're going to see a lot of external cost efficiencies.
If I just sum up your thing, what you just said is basically perfectly aligned with even a company's ROI matrix. Like if an insurer wants to define their ROI matrix, they need to justify that. And I believe I would say a change in the processings of personalized premiums and stuff may accelerate their ROI benefits and stuff. And we will find out more about that in future, because I think we are really just scratching the surface, at least in terms of AI transformation in the insurance industry. So now we have a few more minutes left. So before we wrap up, I would love to get your advice for young actuaries. Like, since this profession might get evolved rapidly due to the AI advancement in future, who knows? We don't have a crystal ball right now, but I would love to hear your feedback on what advice you would like to give to an actuary starting their careers about staying informed and relevant in this changing landscape, especially when it comes to utilizing technology to their best practices.
Yeah, well, this is kind of a bit of a pet project of mine, and it's something that I try to encourage actuaries to do regardless of what subject we're talking about. And my advice is this: keep your eyes open and look very widely around you to see what is going on. Don't just assume that maybe your mentor or your professional society or your employer has all of the correct information. A lot of times, and it's not just actuaries, but a lot of times other professionals assume that everything that they need to know is being given to them in one directional information flow. Like, my Society of Actuaries has a webinar about this topic, and that's all I need to know about that topic. I would disagree. there are so many pieces of information and so many different types of knowledge that are coming from so many different disciplines that I think we would be very well served to understand how is AI being used in marketing, not just for insurance companies, but in general marketing. If you're really interested in this, how is AI being used in engineering, materials science? How is it being used in sports science? How is it being used in astronomy and big, other big areas? Because that, again, is going to be giving you the broader understanding and giving you more ideas to draw from when you're going back to those creative endeavors. This is the thing that we really want to be doing. We want to be using our brains and thinking about things. And so the more different sources of information and different sources of ideas that we bring in, that means the more opportunities we have to cross product and cross pollinate those ideas to get something potentially new and interesting and exciting and that hasn't been seen before. So yeah, my advice is think beyond where you currently are and expose yourself to other ideas from outside of the actuarial world, whether that's the data science world or the law legal world, or whether it's the home healthcare world or whatever it is, you know, get some different ideas from some other places and let those influence you. Might never actually do anything for you. However, I think it's a very good practice.
I love that. You know, like you said, like the think beyond your actuarial realm and try to, you know, get inspired by some of the other practices and see how they're utilizing technology or AI to influence their business practices. Even if it's not going to be relevant to your actual work, but it can spark some ideas which you can utilize in future. So love that. And thank you so much for your time and sharing insights with us, Stephen. I'm pretty sure my listeners got so much, information and valuable insights about how actual business may or may not be impacted by AI and technology. But I'll definitely encourage my listeners to kind of just listen to this episode one more time to make sure that they get all the points that we discussed. And also, please remember to subscribe and follow my channel, Data Science with Sam. It's available on Apple, Amazon Music, and Spotify. Thank you, everyone.